Now, it's a pleasure to welcome two award-winning writers. We're going to talk to them together, but first I'll check. Teddy, is this you?
Yeah.
And Teddy Tolliver is 14, and your school is Moon Area, right?
Yeah.
And before I forget, would you like to give a shout-out to anybody who might be listening online now or later?
Sure. I would like to shout out my mom, my stepdad, and my sister. They're all listening now downstairs.
Fantastic. And let me, have you met Nicole?
I don't think I have.
So you'll be meeting for the first time. And let me bring you on, Nicole. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. And Nicole, you've been here before, I think, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been here last year and the year before.
I thought so. And Nicole's last name is Shigilt Choff. I hope I got that pronounced correctly.
Yeah.
And you're from Winchester Thurston. Is this your senior year?
It is my senior year.
Oh, what a mess, huh? How are you coping with sort of having your senior year derailed like this?
Well, it's a bummer for college visits because I'm probably not going to be able to visit one of the two places where I'm going to go before May 1st, which is the time by which I'll have to decide. But other than that, I'm hanging in. It's okay.
Has Winchester Thurston developed a system for lessons through Zoom or some other kind of way of doing it? Some schools are being very informal about it. It's not like you can turn every school into a cyber school instantaneously. It's very different in terms of the way courses are delivered. Are you still sort of taking classes?
Well, this week we were on spring break, but starting from next week, yeah, we're going to start taking classes online to the best of our ability, I guess.
That's probably the best way to think about it. And Teddy, what's it been like for you at Moon? I'm sure you must just find it to be an interruption and what your routine's been.
Yeah, it is an interruption, but I think we can all come out and learn from it and, like, prepare. If there would be another experience like this, we could be a little bit more prepared, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's a really positive attitude. Has your school been sending things home or making suggestions to you?
Well, the past week, the teacher sent out recommendations of what we could do. It's not required, but starting Monday, actually, they're going to, like, Zoom us or whatever, and mm-hmm. we're going to have, like, a class chat, kind of.
Yeah, I've kind of actually liked using Zoom. We've been using it for meetings, and it took me a little getting used to at first, but I probably will keep it up. After we're all able to be normal again, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Nicole, I wanted to ask you if there's anybody you wanted to acknowledge or give a shout out to.
Yeah, I wanted to say hi to my parents who are also listening downstairs. So it's a little strange because usually my dad's listening in the car when this is happening, but well, they're downstairs, so hello, Mom. Hello, Dad. I'm above you.
I wish I could see both of you. It is a little strange. But to our listeners that are used to hearing thoughts from youth at this time, you're adding a lot to their lives, and I'm glad we can still do this, even though it's remote. So let's talk about your writing, and Teddy, I think I'll start with you. Do you want to talk about what you wrote and just a little bit about it? You're each also welcome if you'd like to share a passage or the work you can, or we can talk about it or do both. Teddy, I'll turn to you. Tell me about your writing.
Okay, so I heard about this program through the Caring Place, which is where I went in 2016 when my father passed away of prostate cancer. And they emailed my mom and I about it. And I looked through. There was a bunch of choices what you could do. It was like art pieces, literature pieces. And then in those, there were like all these different subjects. And so I look and I pick, I can't remember what it was called. But I ended up doing it, and a lot of people liked it, I suppose.
Yeah, I know that locally, the Western Pennsylvania Writers Project gets involved with Scholastic, and I'm not sure if they were the folks at the Caring Place, but that ended up nurturing your love of writing. Was that some of the spark when you spent time there?
Yeah. The Caring Place was a really friendly, like, environment. How do I say this? It was like a place where you could kind of just be yourself and everyone would still like you because they've been through the same thing and they kind of know what you're going through.
Yeah, it's really important. Nobody can fully understand it, but if anybody can come close, it's got to be somebody that had that experience. What kinds of things do you like to write about, and what forms of writing do you practice?
I like doing like biographies on other people. Like, one of my big role models is Theodore Roosevelt. Like, for every English paper, I like to write about him. I don't really know why. There's no reason or rhyme behind it. I just feel like he's a very inspirational person, in a way.
Is that what you submitted to the Scholastic competition, something about Theodore Roosevelt?
No, to the Scholastic competition, I submitted an essay about, like, how my family's kind of living, the title's Living Beyond the Grief, so it's kind of about how my family and our friends, our really close friends, are living beyond the grief and not forgetting him, but kind of embracing the time he was here. And in the end, I end up saying that he's not really gone because my family and I and our friends live through him every day.
That sounds like great writing. I think in talking with people that have lost, that have had people die in their lives that we're close to, one of the things, my brother mentioned this to me, his wife had died in a car wreck, actually a motorcycle wreck. And he said, you know, everybody talks to me like she doesn't exist. They're afraid to bring up her name or to say anything about her. And the fact is, I wish people would, and it's okay. And I think sometimes other people think they're going to upset you if you bring the person up, but it's probably more upsetting if you pretend like they were never around to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like your writing helps to express that a bit. Did you want, and we didn't have a chance to talk, did you want to share a passage at all from it? It's okay if you don't, too.
Sure. I'll share the last paragraph. Grief is a beast that everyone can live through if they find a way to cope. If you are able to live beyond the grief, then the experience can be pretty enlightening. Finding ways to remember the person who is gone is the best way to survive. Finding ways to keep their spirit alive makes it just a little bit easier to get a handle on the sorrow losing someone leaves behind. Living through a person means that the person is never truly gone because you are helping their spirit live on each and every day.
That's Teddy Tolliver, 14 Moon Area. You have such a clear yet deep way of writing, as I listened to that Anybody should be able to connect to that regardless of where they are in life. And it also gives a lot of hope to thank you for sharing it.
Thank you.
Let's turn over to Nicole. And can you tell me, you mentioned before, you know, college. Do you know what you would like to major in?
I don't know what exactly I want to major in, but I'm thinking something related to biology, more specifically maybe either genetics or neuroscience, but I don't know yet. I haven't gotten there.
It takes some time, that's for sure. You won't know fully what it might be until you get there and see what's out there. You have a passion for writing, which will serve you well in both, really in any field. How did you get interested in submitting something to the Scholastic Arts and Writing Awards?
Well, I've always loved to write. Like, ever since I could read, I always enjoyed writing stories for class assignments and even sometimes on my own. And I've always known the Scholastic Writing Awards existed, but, like, I kind of never really connected that I could submit something to the Scholastic Awards until 10th grade. And then I did finally submit a story that I had recently written, and I guess people liked it. So it was a confidence boost to submit again and again. So that's my Scholastic story.
Well, that's great. Tell me about what you submitted this year.
So this year my piece is called They Came For Me, They'll Come For You, and I'll be reading an excerpt of it. And it's a short novella that's also inspired by death, but the death that kind of inspired me to write this was, it wasn't a personal death, but the death that always surrounds us through media and through news and, like, through limited pieces of information, through parts of the story we get. And so that's kind of the pieces and parts of the story of a death is what kind of come out in my story and drive the plot.
Can't wait to hear it whenever you're ready, Nicole.
All right. So since it's a novella, I'll only read an excerpt of it, but so here we go. They came for me, they'll come for you, an excerpt. On that day, 8 years ago, my parents and I found out that my sister Anna was dead. The first thing that had been found was her empty yellow violin case. It was left by the bus stop on the edge of town, near the place where the woods began. Security footage from that station showed Anna getting off the bus, putting the case down, getting out her violin and bow, and heading into the woods. It was the most bizarre behavior anyone in the unit had seen, one of the officers had commented when my parents rushed over to the police station after being called over, having brought me along. Searching the surrounding woods was not easy. It had already gotten dark, and it was still drizzling after this afternoon storm. But after hours of scouring the forest floor for any tracks that might not have been washed away by the rain, the police finally found her. Anna's death was ruled a homicide. It seemed too outlandish to be anything else. Her bizarre entrance into the woods was attributed to the stress of high expectations, and her case was eventually closed for lack of evidence. Maybe I'm still functioning because I know, with almost complete certainty, what happened to Anna that night. Hi, Jack. Anna let herself into my room and sat down next to me. It was the first time I had seen her smile while we were alone. Hi, Anna. I hesitantly smiled back. After years of silently trying, I mustered up the courage to ask what had bothered me ever since I could remember. Are you okay? Why do you always scratch your cheeks and never sleep? She shrugged and giggled. I'm okay. Touching my cheeks is just a habit. And I do sleep. I just like thinking in the dark. Even though I was only six, I knew she wasn't telling the truth. Whether it was human instinct or a sibling connection, I knew that the shrug was too nonchalant and the giggle too heavy. You're lying. You never slept when I was little, and you would watch me all night. Her expression darkened. You haven't told Mom or Dad, right? I had been too scared of what Anna might do if I did. I knew enough about crazy people to know that repetitive motions and constant vigilance were symptoms. I shook my head. Anna's forehead relaxed slightly. This has to be our sibling secret, okay? Deeming my already mortified expression as insufficient confirmation, she added, "Or I'll tell Mom you snuck out of your room last night. You'll never get cookies ever again." I nodded as cold expanded all throughout my body. "No more questions. Okay, Jack?" Anna began to look unsettled again. I nodded. "Okay." Anna stood up and left. A few weeks after I encountered her dark, cheek-scratching stare at night, school got canceled due to heavy snowfall. I was left alone with a babysitter all day because Mommy and Daddy still had to go to their jobs and Anna's middle school was still open. The babysitter left me to my own devices, and I went about doing what I loved most at the time. I explored everywhere I was not allowed to go when the rest of my family was home. I had always been envious of Anna's violin playing skills. She had begun playing when she was 10, and her parents told me I can start when I was 10, too, because a 6-year-old clearly could not be trusted with an expensive, fragile instrument. But I didn't want to wait 4 more years. I wanted to play now. So I snuck into Anna's room and pulled her yellow violin case out from under the bed. I sawed away at the instrument for at least 10 minutes in the way I had seen her do before giving up trying to sound anywhere as masterful as she did. As I was putting away the violin, a side compartment on the case suddenly sprang open like the lid on a treasure chest. I must have inadvertently hit a hidden latch. Curious, I reached my hand inside and pulled out a spiral-bound notebook. The music books didn't have anything interesting in them, just a bunch of stripes, dots, numbers, and squiggles, but the notebook did. I had just found my older sister's diary, and I was about to put my newly learned reading skills to use. I flipped open the blue cover and began my examination. The first entry was from a few weeks ago. 11/9/93. Dear Diary, my little brother walked into my room yesterday night while I was mentally talking to the harmonizers about what dress I should wear to the school dance. I was scratching my cheeks to try and make them stop because they were starting to get annoying, and then Jack came in and panicked because I guess I look weird staring into space and scratching my face. I tried to tell Jack that everything was okay and that I was sorry for scaring him yesterday, but I think he knows about the harmonizers, and I'm afraid he'll tell Mom and Dad. They'll think I'm a freak and won't love me or be proud of me anymore. I want the harmonizers to go away because the songs they sing are getting kind of creepy. There's a lot in them about death. Love, Anna. This left my 6-year-old brain worrying. Who were the harmonizers? I couldn't just let my sister talk to them if she thought they were creepy. And songs about death? Well, first grade doesn't teach a kid to fully comprehend the gravity of a life being over forever. I did know that it was an awfully somber subject to sing about. But I also could not tell anyone that I had read Anna's diary. Anna would kill me, and she had threatened me with telling my parents that I stayed up too late at night, for which I would surely get in big trouble. She would likely act on that threat if she learned of my infringement. Or she could do something worse. Not only say that I stayed up late, but made up that she saw me stealing cookies from the pantry at night, or that I snuck out of the house after dark. Besides, the harmonizers were just voices in her head and couldn't actually hurt her. When I had walked in on her talking with them, there was no one in the room except for her. Anna came into my room the next evening. "Hello, Jack," she smiled. She must have meant it to look warm, but I felt only cold settle into my stomach as I looked up at her from where I sat on the floor. I mustered my best innocent expression and greeted her back. "If you're looking for something to read, I have some books I can lend you." Anna tilted her head like a dark-eyed predator. "Just don't read anything without asking, because some of my books might be kind of scary. I don't want you to get any nightmares from my teen vampire novels." She giggled again in her too heavy way. Her threat was obvious, even to my young mind. If I read anything I wasn't supposed to, my life would be turned into a nightmare, and it would be caused by my sister, not teen vampire novels. I nodded. "I'm good for now, but I'll tell you if you want a book." Anna shifted her weight from leaning on the doorframe, but turned back towards me with a smirk. "Don't tell Mom or Dad about my vampire novels. It's kind of a personal thing, and I don't want them to get mad at me for reading what they think is dumb. I nodded dutifully, knowing that if I spelled anything personal about her, the consequences would be unpleasant. I didn't dare go snooping for my sister's diary after her threat to me. Much later, when Anna had disappeared and my family had been called to the police station, I thought of the harmonizers, thinking that maybe they had somehow influenced her death. I wanted to tell my parents about them, and even the police when I was questioned, but I knew that no one would believe a third grader giving vague descriptions of imaginary voices. What would it have changed anyway? Imaginary voices can't kill. Anna would still have been dead, and my parents would still be mourning their daughter, lamenting all of the stress they had put on her to be successful. And they would still continue to essentially ignore my existence. After Anna had died, my parents didn't even bother telling me what really happened. All they kept saying to me on that fateful night at the police station, and for years afterwards, was that she was gone. Everyone refused to tell me more, even years later. I had, however, heard enough smatterings of adult conversations to know that something about her disappearance and death was eerie and strange. That's the end.
Wow, you're a very good writer, and as you read that, I could really visualize it. It was almost like watching a short film or a little teleplay. Those characters coming to life. I want to thank you both for being here. And I don't know if you had questions of each other. If Nicole, you had any questions of Teddy or Teddy of Nicole. I know you can't see each other, but you're both really great writers. Teddy, do you have any idea of what you might like to do after high school?
As of right now, my plan is to go somewhere into the nursing field, like a nurse practitioner or a physician's assistant.
That's excellent. You both have some interest in biology, given that, or at least some of the life sciences. Did you have any questions for Nicole by any chance? I don't want to put you on the spot, just curious.
No, I don't.
And Nicole, we mentioned before your aspirations, did you have anything you might like to ask to Teddy?
Yeah, I always like to ask fellow prose and like essay writers what they think about poetry.
Good question. Teddy, do you have any reflections about poetry?
I think poetry is a way you can express. I see poetry as a way you can express things, but it could really mean something else, kind of. Does that make sense?
Sort of. I think I know what you're saying.
Well, it sounds like it can be either very explicit and clear, kind of like the piece that you shared earlier, Teddy, or it could be more abstract and subject to interpretation. That's a good way of looking at it. Nicole, what are your thoughts about that? Poetry in general, I mean.
Well, I think with poetry and young writers that there's a high risk of becoming too melodramatic and kind of pushing away an audience through poetry. I think there's less of a risk with that in prose, which is what attracts me to that genre so much. But I think poetry done well can be a very, very effective form of expression, just like prose.
Interesting. Well, I want to thank you both, and I hope you both know you have an open invitation to be with us anytime you'd like to be, especially once our studios are back open. Theodore Tolliver and Nicole Shiglachoff, thank you so much for being with us today. Best wishes for continued success to both of you. And I should ask, did either of you have anything you meant to say that you didn't? Teddy, you good?
Yeah.
And Nicole, did you get everything and you hope to?
I did. Thank you.
Great. Thank you both. Stay safe. And thank you for allowing us to feel like we're getting out a little bit as we listen. We can't really get out and meet new people, you know, sit in a coffee store, a shop, and meet somebody. You're giving folks a chance to kind of get outside today, even though they're still in. So thanks to you both.